Welcome, everyone, to the bidder webcast for the March 2025 auction under AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. My name's Katie, and I work for NERA. NERA serves as the auction manager for AEP Ohio's CBP, and presenting with me today are my colleagues, Rachel and Abby. So in today's presentation, we're going to provide an overview of the competitive bidding process, details on the qualification and auction process, and we'll also cover the specifics for this auction, including the products available and the calendar with deadlines. So all lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, but you can ask written questions if you have any throughout the presentation. If you have a question, you'll locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, type in your question, and then when you submit it, please select all panelists. Also, if you have any technical difficulties throughout today's presentation, you can use that Q&A panel to let the panelists know about that as well. At the end of today or shortly tomorrow, the presentation, as well as questions and answers, will be posted to the CBP website. So I'm going to start with a disclaimer that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. The governing documents include orders from the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio in the case provided here on the first bullet of this slide. So first, on April 3rd, 2024, the commission issued an opinion and order authorizing AEP Ohio to implement its 5th electric security plan and continue with biannual auctions to procure full requirements products. Second, on September 19th, 2024, the commission issued a finding and order under the same case number approving AEP Ohio's compliance updates to the product schedule for a 4-year ESP term and then to the forms of the rules and master SSO supply agreement to implement a capacity proxy price mechanism related to the capacity auction delays under PJM's reliability pricing model. The other governing documents include the CBP rules, which are the bidding rules for the auctions, the master standard service offer or SSO supply agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the part 1 and part 2 applications. And you can find all of these documents currently posted to the CBP website, which is aepohiocbp.com. So as I mentioned, NERA Economic Consulting serves as the auction manager for the auctions under AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. Our role is to be the single point of contact for bidders. And so this means that all questions from potential bidders must be referred to us. NERA ensures the CBP rules approved by the commission are followed and that bidder qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. And then we also administer the auction and submit a report on the results to the commission. The agenda for today's presentation is as follows. So in the first part of the presentation, I'm going to provide an overview of the products available and the auctions generally. Then I'll provide a description of the contract. I'll pass the presentation to Abby next, and she'll continue with an overview of the website and the application process, including requirements to qualify to bid. And then Rachel will continue the last part of the presentation with information regarding bids and the auction process. And then at the end of the presentation, we'll respond to questions that we receive. So the upcoming auction will be held on March 4th. This is the 4th of a series of 8 full requirements auctions to be held under ESP 5. The product schedule includes 3 products to be procured this March for 12, 24, and 36 month terms, all starting June 1, 2025. Notably, the results of the base residual auction under PJM's RPM for the 26-27 and 27-28 delivery years are not expected to be known 5 business days prior to March 4th. Therefore, under the rules, capacity proxy price is announced for these 2 delivery years, and we're going to provide those in the contract section of this presentation, along with an overview of how the true-up mechanism is going to work. The prior auction was held in October 2024. And this was for 12, 24, and 36 month products as well. Same supply period beginning June 1, 2025. There were 10 registered bidders, and the range for the starting price or round one price was between $135 and $185 per megawatt hour. All tranches that were available were procured at the clearing prices that are provided here in this table. The commission accepted the results on October 30th, 2024. So the tranches available are load following slice of system 4 requirements tranches. Each tranche represents a 6% of the load of SSO customers. SSO customers are customers that take retail generation service from AEP Ohio, excluding PIP customers. PIP customers are those on AEP Ohio's percentage of income payment plan. This slide here provides the delivery point. And then lastly, SSO suppliers or winners in the auction will assume the responsibility as the load serving entity in PJM. And this includes responsibility for scheduling SSO supply and making arrangements for delivery of SSO supply. So as I mentioned in the last slide, the load of SSO customers is divided into a number of tranches. The tranche targets or the number of available tranches in this auction is 17 for each of the 12 and 24 month products, and then 16 tranches for the 36 month supply period. Each tranche represents 1% of the load of SSO customers. And so that means that a supplier that serves a single tranche of the 12 month product, for example, provides all necessary services to meet the needs of 1% of the load of SSO customers for 12 months beginning on June 1, 2025. So there's a load cap of 40 tranches in the auction, which is a limit on the number of tranches that a supplier can bid on and win across the 3 products in the auction. The format for the auction is a clock auction. In this March, there's going to be multiple tranches available for the 3 products. And again, the product is for a given supply period. There are also multiple rounds, and in each round, suppliers state how many tranches they want to supply at the going price that's announced by the auction manager. From one round to the next, the auction continues and the price will decrease or tick down for a product as long as there's excess supply for that product, which is when suppliers bid to supply more tranches than the number of tranches that are available for that product. Switching between products is allowed, and the auction will close when the number of tranches bid is equal to or less than the number of tranches that are being procured for each product so that no price is moving down anymore. There is no sealed bid round. Instead, bidders will supply exit prices as they withdraw throughout the auction. And finally, a note that the auction establishes a single clearing price for each product that would be applicable to all tranches and all winning suppliers for that product. We provide on this slide the PLC in megawatts for SSO customers, excluding PIP customers. This PLC figure is based on the 5 highest coincident peaks experienced by PJM and is applicable to the upcoming 25-26 delivery year. The PLC is 1,453 megawatts. And then below that figure, we provide for reference and informational purposes only the megawatt measure for the tranche. And please note that this figure, the megawatt measure, is just for reference and information purposes because the amount of actual quantity to be delivered will vary by hour and will depend on many factors, including migration of SSO customers. So suppliers are paid the auction clearing price for each megawatt hour of supply during the delivery term times a seasonal factor, and that seasonal factor is expected to be 1. So this slide here lays out the key events over the next 2 months. The application process is in 2 parts. First, applicants will submit the part 1 application with their qualification materials beginning this Thursday, January 9th, and that's when the online part 1 form will become available. The part 1 application has to be submitted by noon on the part 1 date on January 24th. Applicants that become qualified bidders pursuant to a successful Part 1 application will be notified that they can submit a Part 2 on January 30th. Then the following day, the Part 2 window opens and bidders can start submitting their Part 2 applications, which includes posting pre-bid security. And then the Part 2 application is due by February 18th. Bidders will be notified whether they're registered and eligible to participate in the auction on the Part 2 notification date on February 25th. That's also the point when we distribute the bidder manual so that bidders can start preparing for participation in the auction. We'll hold a trial auction on the 26th so that registered bidders can practice using the software and, you know, go through the bid submission procedures. And then the next week on March 4th, we'll hold the auction. We're going to make several announcements throughout the process, including announcing the minimum and maximum starting prices by next Monday, January 13th. We'll provide an update to the seasonal factors and megawatt measure as necessary by January 31st. And then we'll provide the round one prices to registered bidders by February 27th. So as I mentioned, the application process is in two parts and both parts are completed entirely online. Applicants submit a Part 1 and a Part 2 application through online forms. So you'll need an account to access those forms and we'll go through that. With the Part 1 application, the materials provided include contact and company information for the bidder and supporting documents, including financial information. Applicants are also required to upload what we call inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format for you to complete, and Abby will provide additional information on which inserts are required by each bidder in the next part of the presentation. In Part 2, the materials required include providing an indicative offer at the minimum and maximum starting prices, uploading again more inserts, and then also providing either a pre-bid letter of credit or cash in an amount that supports the indicative offer. Importantly, no hard copy versions of any of the documents are required throughout the process. The auction results will be contingent on final commission approval. The auction manager will submit a confidential report on the auction results to the commission on the day the auction closes. And then the commission will issue a decision within 2 days of auction close. If the commission decision does not come out within the 2 days, then the auction results would be deemed accepted. The commission may publicly release the auction clearing price and the names of the winning bidders from the auction. Then within 3 days of commission's acceptance of the results, the master SSO supply agreement will be fully executed and winning bidders need to meet the creditworthiness requirements under the contract. As I mentioned, bidders are subject to load caps. So first, a bidder cannot bid or win more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction. And then second, the amount a bidder can win is in a given auction could be farther reduced by the credit-based tranche cap. And that depends on the credit ratings of the bidder or its guarantor. And the credit-based tranche caps have been increased again for this March 2025 auction, and they're provided here in this table. So that completes the overview section. I'm going to cover a few slides now in this Part 2 with details on the product design and the contract. So SSO suppliers, again, winners in this auction will assume all responsibilities of a load-serving entity in PJM for the percentage of the load they serve and are responsible for providing full requirement service, including energy, capacity, and ancillary services. Again, SSO customers excludes PIP customers. Full requirement service and the LSE obligations of SSO suppliers are defined in the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and in particular, please see Attachment F of the agreement for a sample PJM invoice with each billing line item and an indication of whether it's the responsibility of the supplier or of AAP Ohio. Under the CBP rules, a capacity proxy price will be established for a delivery year if the results of the BRA under PJM's RPM for that delivery year are not expected to be known by or prior to 5 business days before the SSO auction begins. If a capacity proxy price is established for a delivery year relevant to a product in the auction, then a true-up mechanism is going to kick in, and that mechanism is described in Attachment H to the Master SSO Supply Agreement. And so, you know, we encourage all prospective suppliers to carefully review this Attachment H in order to become familiar with the contract. But as described there, a true-up will take place in the delivery year for which a capacity proxy price was established only. There'll be an additional line item on the invoice, and the supplier will be paid or will pay the difference between the actual capacity price charged through PJM's RPM and the capacity proxy price that was announced for that product, multiplied by the supplier's share of the capacity obligation in each day. So essentially, winning suppliers are going to be made whole for the difference between the proxy price that's established now and provided on the next slide and the actual capacity price that they're required to pay to PJM for capacity. And again, that true-up occurs only during the delivery year for which a capacity proxy price was established. So in this March 2025 SSO auction, the capacity proxy prices for the 26, 27, and 27, 28 delivery years will be $270.35 per megawatt day. And that's equal to the BRA results for the 25, 26 delivery year as posted by PJM. The capacity proxy prices apply only to the delivery year or delivery years of the product for which the PJM BRA result are not available. These proxy prices may be updated. If there is an update, that would happen no later than 5 business days prior to the start of the auction. So this is the final slide in part 2. It provides an overview of the credit requirements. There are 2 distinct credit requirements, and corresponding to those requirements are 2 distinct unsecured credit lines that the SSO supplier or its guarantor can qualify for. The first credit requirement is the independent credit requirement, or ICR, and that's an amount per tranche that declines throughout the term of the agreement. Corresponding to the ICR requirement is an unsecured credit line called the independent credit threshold that can be used to meet this ICR. So whether a supplier or a guarantor qualifies for this credit line depends on criteria that's provided in the agreement. And a creditworthiness evaluation will be conducted with the Part 1 application process so that a bidder can have a good idea of how they'll be treated in regards to credit under the contract ahead of time. The second credit requirement is mark-to-market exposure. That exposure is based on the difference between the prevailing market prices and the market prices that were in effect on the date that the auction is completed. To meet this second requirement, a supplier or guarantor can depend on a credit limit that may be granted to the supplier or guarantor based again on criteria that's listed under the contract. So under the terms of the agreement, a supplier can use a guarantee with a creditworthy guarantor. A supplier can also post a letter of credit, and there are forms of the guarantee and letter of credit provided as attachments to the master agreement for you to review. A supplier can also post cash to meet credit requirements. So that completes the section on the contract and credit, and I'm going to pass the presentation now to Abby to continue with information about the CBP website and then how to qualify to participate.
Thanks, Katie. Hi, everyone. In this next section, I'll provide you with an overview of the AEP Ohio auction website. The auction website can be found at aepohiocbp.com. It's the central source of information where bidders can find announcements made by the auction manager, the schedule for the current auction and important dates, auction documents, and data provided by AEP Ohio. Bidders can navigate through different pages of the website using the panel on the left-hand side of the screen and clicking the appropriate tab name. And just to point out, a link to the application website is also available at the bottom of the navigation bar. Clicking on the Information tab displays the link to access the Documents page, along with links to the Announcements page and the FAQs page. On the Documents page, bidders can find a number of files, such as the auction rules, the master SSO supply agreement, and pre-bid security documents. Also on this page are the illustrated versions of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. And today's presentation will also be posted here on the Documents page and will likely be made available later today. Clicking on the Data Room tab will take you to the page where AEP Ohio has made available hourly energy data, customer count data, PLC and NSPL data, as well as monthly switching statistics. The information on this page is updated on or before the 20th of each month. And also available on the Data Room page is government aggregation data, which is updated less frequently. To contact the auction manager, you may click on the Contact Us tab of the website. Here you can register to receive announcements about this auction as well as any upcoming auctions. You can also register to receive login credentials to access the application forms to participate in the auctions. And if you have a question, you can click the Ask a Question link and fill out the required fields. Your question will be submitted to the auction manager, and we aim to provide a response within 2 business days. You may also submit any questions to us by email at aep-cbp@nera.com. In this next section, I'll provide an overview of the application process for purposes of participating in the upcoming AEP auction and review some of the information that bidders will need to provide in their online Part 1 and Part 2 forms. The online application to participate in the auction is completed on a website separate from the AEP CBP site. You can access the application site directly by going to aepohiocbp-application.com. And as I mentioned earlier, a link to the application website is also available at the bottom of the navigation bar on the AEP CBP website. Ahead of the Part 1 window opening, new bidders who have not participated in the AEP auction should register for an account on the AEP CBP website by clicking Contact Us and then Register for an Application Account on the left-hand side of the webpage. Alternatively, bidders can send us an email at aep-cbp@nera.com to request login credentials, making sure to provide the contact information shown on the slide here. If you're currently an account holder, the auction manager will automatically send you your login credentials and you do not need to re-register for an account. Current account holders are considered returning bidders that have qualified to participate in an AEP auction in 2023 or later, as well as any entities that registered for an account in 2023 or later but have not previously qualified. And please note that all account holders, whether you are a new or returning bidder, will need to activate their account by following the instructions provided in the account activation email. And the auction manager will send these instructions for accessing and completing the online forms to account holders prior to the Part 1 window opening. Next, I'll provide an overview of the Part 1 application requirements. The first section of the online Part 1 form will ask you to provide contact information for the bidder and for various representatives, including the representative of the applicant and a legal representative in Ohio. In this section, a bidder may also choose to name nominees to be included on all correspondence with the auction manager. The next section of the online Part 1 form requires a bidder to provide information related to its status as a PJM member and to indicate whether it is currently a market buyer, market seller, and whether it is qualified as a load-serving entity. With the Part 1 application, bidders are also required to make a number of certifications, agreeing to the auction rules, agreeing to the terms of the master SSO supply agreement, and agreeing to keep certain auction-related information confidential. Bidders also need to provide financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. And please note that additional information will be required for a foreign bidder, as well as bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. There's also a section in the online Part 1 form where bidders may propose modifications to the pre-bid credit instruments. These would be the pre-bid letter of credit, the letter of intent to provide a guarantee, and the letter of reference. These credit instruments may need to be submitted with the bidder's Part 2 application, so this section in the online Part 1 form provides bidders with an opportunity to propose changes to the standard forms of these documents. AP Ohio will review any proposed modifications, and a response will be provided to the bidder indicating which changes are acceptable and which are not. A preliminary list of acceptable modifications to the pre-bid security documents can be found on the documents page of the auction website. Any modification already on this preliminary list may be used by any bidder, so please be sure to share this list with your bank. And if a modification is accepted for one bidder, it will be made available to all bidders on an optional basis through this running list. Bidders will be required to fill out inserts for the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. Inserts are submitted alongside the rest of the application as separate Microsoft Word documents. All inserts can be found on the auction website at aepohiocbp.com on the Documents page under the Information tab on the left-hand side of the screen. These inserts for the Part 1 and Part 2 applications are available in the correspondingly named zip files. And just as a note, there are instructions for what is considered an acceptable signature within each insert template. This next slide gives an overview of the inserts that may be required with the Part 1 application, to whom they apply, and whether notarization is required to complete them. All bidders are required to provide the representative designation insert and the representative responsibilities insert and the certifications insert as part of their Part 1 application for each auction. The legal representative insert will be retained in the online Part 1 form for returning bidders that participated in the October 2024 auction and does not need to be re-uploaded unless the information provided in the insert has changed. Returning bidders will be asked to indicate that the legal representative has not changed. And please note that the legal representative insert will be required for any bidder that has not yet participated in an auction following the Commission's approval of the new ESP. Lastly, some inserts are only required in certain circumstances, which are further outlined in the illustrative Part 1 form. For example, the PJM requirements insert should be provided if a bidder is not currently a member of PJM in good standing, or is not qualified as a market buyer, market seller, or a load serving entity. If a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 1 application, that bidder will receive a Part 1 notification from the auction manager and will be invited to submit a Part 2 application. New bidders and returning bidders must fulfill the same requirements in the online Part 2 form. In the Part 2 application, bidders submit their indicative offer and preliminary interest in the available products at the minimum and maximum starting prices, provide pre-bid security, and make a number of additional certifications. Foreign entities will have additional requirements to complete with their Part 2 application as well. I'll next review in more detail some of the requirements of the Part 2 application. The online Part 2 form will require bidders to provide an indicative offer. The indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid across all available products at the minimum starting price and at the maximum starting price. The indicative offer at the maximum starting price is used to determine the amount of pre-bid security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. In turn, this value sets the total number of tranches that a bidder will be able to bid in the first round of the auction. This is also referred to as a bidder's initial eligibility. A bidder must also provide its preliminary interest in each product. Preliminary interest is the number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid for each product at the maximum and minimum starting prices. A bidder submits its preliminary interest at the maximum and minimum starting price for each product separately. A bidder's preliminary interest in a product is not binding and is only informative. The preliminary interest in a product at a given price shouldn't exceed the indicative offer at that price. However, the sum of a bidder's preliminary interest across all products can exceed the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. For example, a bidder may choose an indicative offer of 10, meaning they are only willing to win a total of 10 tranches across the 12-month, 24-month, and 36-month products at the maximum starting price. However, that bidder can state its preliminary interest in each product separately is 10 tranches. This means that the bidder is only willing to win 10 tranches total, but those 10 tranches could be all tranches of the 12-month product, all tranches of the 24-month product, all tranches of the 36-month product, or any combination of these three products. Bidders will also need to submit pre-bid security with their Part 2 applications in the form of cash or pre-bid letter of credit. The amount of pre-bid security is equal to $500,000 per tranche of a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. Bidders may be required to provide additional pre-bid security in amount of $300,000 per tranche if that bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, or if the entity on whose financial standing a bidder is relying does not meet the minimum credit requirements under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. Bidders will also need to make a number of certifications with their Part 2 application, certifying to comply with the Association and Confidential Information Rules, and certifying to keep information related to the auction confidential. As a reminder to bidders choosing to provide a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security, the pre-bid letter of credit can only be provided by the issuing bank to the auction manager as an electronic PDF file via email at aep-cbp@nira.com. Hard copy versions of the pre-bid letter of credit and any required additional pre-bid security will not be accepted. Any required additional pre-bid security must be uploaded to the online Part 2 form. And as a reminder, please review the standard forms of the pre-bid credit instruments ahead of the deadline for Part 1 applications, so you may propose changes to the standard forms if you so choose. Also, with their Part 2 applications, bidders must certify that any bid submitted in the auction is binding. And then lastly, foreign bidders or bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity must provide the executed versions of the draft documents they provided with their Part 1 application. And please note that these executed versions must include any changes that were required by AEP Ohio. And just like in the online Part 1 form, the online Part 2 form will require bidders to upload inserts. Bidders submitting cash as pre-bid security will need to provide the cash certification insert, while all bidders must provide the Part 2 certifications insert. And again, these inserts are available on the AEP-CBP website, and instructions for signing each is provided within each insert. And with that, I'll now pass things over to Rachel.
Thanks, Abby. I'll end today's presentation, everyone, by providing an overview of the bidding process in the auction. Now, if a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 2 application, that bidder will receive a Part 2 notification from the auction manager, and they'll be eligible to bid in the auction. And bidders will submit their bids in the auction using an online auction software. As we discussed earlier, the format of the auction is a descending clock auction that features multiple products and multiple rounds of bidding. What we mean by multiple products is that tranches for all products in the auction are procured at once. So the tranches for all three products in the auction, the 12-month, 24-month, and 36-month products, they're procured simultaneously. What we mean by a multi-round design is that in a given round, prices will be provided to bidders and suppliers will state the number of tranches of each product they wish to supply at those prices. To the extent that for a given product, there are more tranches that are bid than there are tranches available, then the price for that product will tick down in the next round and suppliers will have an opportunity to bid again at those lower prices. Now, during the course of the auction, suppliers also have the ability to switch their bids from one product to another. So not just reacting to the absolute value of the price going down for a product each round, but suppliers can also switch their bids between products based on their relative prices. Each round in the auction is made up of three phases: it's bidding, calculating, and reporting. Bidders state the number of tranches of each product they're willing to supply at the going prices for that round during the bidding phase. Once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and the auction manager then tabulates the results of that round and calculates the next round's going prices. After the calculating phase ends, the reporting phase begins, and at this time, bidders will be provided with the going prices for the next round, and bidders will also be provided with the results of their own bid in that round. Note, though, that bidders will have access to the results of their own bid, but will not have access to the results of another bidder's bid. During the reporting phase, bidders will also be provided with a range of total excess supply, and this is a range of excess supply across all three of the products. At the end of the reporting phase, the bidding phase for the next round begins, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. If it's determined that there is insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding, the auction manager can reduce the tranche targets. The specific criteria that could lead to this reduction will be determined ahead of time prior to the auction, but this information will be kept confidential. It will not be provided to bidders. However, once specific criteria have been met, the discretion to reduce the tranche targets will be eliminated, and the values of the tranche targets will hold through the end of the auction. The starting prices or the round one prices are provided to registered bidders ahead of the auction. And I'll note that it's not necessarily the case that the starting prices will be the same across the three products. A bid in round one is the number of tranches of each product a bidder is willing to supply at the round one prices. In round one, a bidder cannot bid a total number of tranches across all of the products that's greater than its initial eligibility. And a reminder here that a bidder's initial eligibility is equal to its indicative offer at the maximum starting price that was provided in its online Part 2 form. In round one, a bidder can bid a total number of tranches across all products equal to its initial eligibility, or a total number of tranches across all products less than its initial eligibility, but a bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches it bids across all products from round to round. So a bidder choosing to bid a total number of tranches across all products less than its initial eligibility in round one will only be able to bid that same total amount or less in subsequent rounds. However, remember that a bidder can switch its bids, so a bidder can increase the number of tranches bid on a particular product by reallocating tranches from one product to another. After the bidding phase ends, the auction will enter the calculating phase, and the auction manager will tabulate the results of the round and calculate the next round's going prices. Then this information is made available to bidders in the reporting phase, and this slide gives an example of the information that's provided to bidders at that time. Bidders will be provided a range of total excess supply. Again, this range of total excess supply aggregates the excess supply for all products, and this range also includes tranches of free eligibility. We won't discuss free eligibility during today's presentation, but more information on free eligibility will be provided to registered bidders prior to the auction. The actual value of total excess supply will fall within the given range. In this example, the range reported to bidders is 106 to 110, which means that the actual value of total excess supply across all three products could be equal to 106 or 110 or any value in between. Bidders are also provided the going price for each product for the next round. In the example here, you see the going price for each product for round two. Note that the prices here are illustrative. Bidders will also have access to the results of their own bid, but as I said earlier, bidders will not have access to the results of any other bidder's bid. Information regarding a bidder's bid, identity, or eligibility will not be accessible to other bidders. So bidders that satisfy, again, all requirements of the Part 2 application will receive a Part 2 notification from the auction manager, and registered bidders will also receive with their Part 2 notification a bidder user manual. The bidder user manual will provide the decrement formulas used to calculate the going price for each product from round to round. And remember that the price for a product ticks down when there is excess supply for that product. Now, starting in round two, in response to a reduction in prices, bidders may choose to leave their bid the same as in the previous round. A bidder can choose to withdraw tranches from the auction. A bidder can choose to switch, which means it would decrease the number of tranches bid on one or more products while increasing the number of tranches bid on one or more products. Or a bidder could choose to do both, withdraw and switch. Again, a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility across all products. In round one, this value is the bidder's initial eligibility. In round two, a bidder's eligibility is equal to the total number of tranches across all products that the bidder bid in round one. In round three and in subsequent rounds, A bidder's eligibility is equal to the eligibility from the prior round minus any tranches that the bidder withdrew from the auction. On these next few slides, I'll provide more information about how a bidder can bid in response to a reduction in prices. Specifically, I'll review some special circumstances in which a bidder would be required to provide additional information as part of its bid. On this slide, I'll discuss withdrawing tranches, and this is when a bidder reduces the total number of tranches bid across all products. In this example, the bidder was bidding on a total of 32 tranches in round one, and after a reduction in prices, the bidder is bidding on a total of 31 tranches, and it's reducing the number of tranches bid on the 36th month product. When a bidder withdraws tranches of a given product, the bidder will be prompted to provide what's called an exit price for the number of tranches it's withdrawing of that product. This is a best and last offer for the tranches of that product that are being withdrawn from the auction. An exit price must be greater than the current round's going price for that product, but below or equal to the previous round's going price for that product. In the example here, a bidder is withdrawing one tranche of the 36-month product where it was bidding on 10 tranches, it's now bidding on 9. The bidder submits an exit price of $119.25, which is above the going price for the 36-month product of $118.75, but below the previous round's price of $125 per megawatt hour. And we'll discuss this more later on, but there is a possibility that the withdrawn tranche will be retained, such that even though the bidder is requesting to withdraw the tranche is going to stay for purposes of filling the tranche target for the product. If for the 36-month product, many bidders are either switching their tranches out or withdrawing and reducing the amount they're bidding for the 36-month product, such that we go from having excess supply to not having enough tranches, then some withdrawn tranches will be retained. And these tranches are retained in order of exit price from lowest to highest. Now, whether or not that withdrawn tranche is retained, the eligibility associated with the tranche is lost at the point when the tranche is withdrawn. So even if the bidder's withdrawn tranche is retained, its eligibility in this example will decrease from 32 to 31. This next slide provides another example of when a bidder will be asked to provide some additional information when submitting its bid. This slide provides an example of switching, where a bidder reallocates tranches bid on one product to another. However, you see here that the bidder is switching into two products at the same time, where it is reducing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 36-month product from 10 to 8, while at the same time, the bidder is increasing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 12-month product from 12 to 13, and increasing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 24-month product from 10 to 11. In this example, the total number of tranches bid across all three products, 32, does not change. Tranches are simply reallocated. When a bidder reduces the number of tranches bid on one product and increases the number of tranches bid on two products, the bidder will be asked for a switching priority. And this means that if both tranches cannot be switched, then the switching priority indicates to which product that one tranche should be switched. Here, the bidder assigns a switching priority of 1 to the 12-month product. So if both tranches cannot be switched and only one tranche will be permitted to switch, the one tranche that can be switched will be switched to the 12-month product. So 1 is the highest switching priority. Similarly to when a withdrawn tranche would be retained, a switch can be denied if, as a result of other bidders switching and or withdrawing tranches from, in this case, the 36-month product, we go from having excess supply to not having enough tranches to fill the target for the 36-month product. In that case, the first tranches that are retained to fill the target are any withdrawn tranches from that product in order of exit price. And if that's still not sufficient to fill the target for the 36-month product, then switches are denied at the prices at which they were last freely bid, which is the price of the prior round. The last example we'll review where a bidder will need to provide additional information when submitting its bid is when a bidder is switching and withdrawing at the same time. In this example, you can see that the bidder is withdrawing because it's reducing the total number of tranches bid across all products from 32 to 31. So the bidder is withdrawing one tranche. Now you can see the bidder is also switching. As for the 12-month product, the number of tranches bid is increasing. So the bidder is decreasing the number of tranches bid on two products while also increasing the number of tranches bid on one product. In this case, the bidder will be asked to designate the exit. Now looking at this bid, we know the bidder is withdrawing one tranche total, and we know the one tranche, there is one tranche being switched to the 12-month product. However, we don't know whether the tranche being withdrawn is from the 24-month product or the 36-month product. And we don't know whether the tranche being switched is from the 24-month product or the 36-month product. So the bidder must specify which tranche, either the one tranche from the 24-month product or the one tranche from the 36, is being withdrawn. And the reason this is important is that the tranche that is designated as the tranche that's being withdrawn is the tranche for which the bidder can provide an exit price. And in this example, the bidder is designating the tranche coming out of the 36-month product as the withdrawn tranche. Now that we've reviewed some bid scenarios, we'll discuss some differences in reporting compared to the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase of round one. Now, starting in round two, a bidder will still receive information about its own bid, but this information will now also include whether, to the extent the bidder was requesting tranches be withdrawn, whether those tranches are retained, and to the extent the bidder was switching, whether any of those switches were denied. The bidder is still provided with a range of total excess supply, as well as the going prices for the next round. The auction will continue as long as there is positive total excess supply, or in other words, when the total number of tranches bid across all products is greater than the auction volume. The auction will close on all products at the same time, and a single uniform price will be the products. And this is called the auction clearing price for each of the products. Bidding on all products will stop at the same time, and all bidders that win tranches for a product will get the same price for that product. The clearing price for a product is the lowest price at which the tranche target for that product is filled. The final price for a product could be the going price for the last round, but it could also be an exit price if, when filling the tranche target, the lowest price at which the tranche target is filled for a product is an exit price. Or it could be the price of a prior round if it's a price that's associated with a denied switch. This slide provides an example of the auction closing rules. And just for illustrative purposes, we're just looking at a single product here, say the 12-month product. In this case, we'll assume that the prices for the other two products have stopped ticking down, and we'll focus just on the one product. Here you'll see in the number bid column that the total number of tranches bid across all bidders fell from 19 to 14. So the auction will close. To fill the target of 17 tranches, again, let's just say of the 12-month product, we'll first take the 14 tranches bid at the round 12 going price. And now we're still short 3 tranches, so we will need to retain some of the withdrawn tranches, and the exit prices submitted by the bidders will be used to set the auction clearing price. To decide which of the tranches will be retained, we'll consider the exit prices from lowest to highest. We need to retain 3 tranches total to fill the target. We'll first select the 2 tranches with the lowest exit price of $95.47 from bidder A. We're still short 1 tranche. We'll then select the tranche with the next lowest exit price, which is the single tranche withdrawn by bidder B with an exit price of $95.85. We've now filled the tranche target of 17 tranches for the 12-month product, and the auction clearing price for the 12-month product will be equal to bidder B's exit price of $95.85. We will not retain any of the withdrawn tranches from bidder C. All bidders who are holding tranches of the 12-month product will receive the same clearing price for the 12-month product of $95.85. Before wrapping up the presentation today, I'll provide a few more reminders about the auction. First, bidders will have an opportunity to practice submitting bids using the auction software in a trial auction on February 26th. And during the auction, if you're experiencing any technical difficulties, the backup procedure for submitting your bids is to do so by phone. Technical assistance will be available to take your bid over the phone and submit it into the software on your behalf. The last bid that's submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software is the bid that counts. A backup bid processed over the phone will only count if it's entered and verified by the technical assistant in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. So it's the bidder's responsibility to provide a complete bid consistent with the CBP rules and to get the bid in on time. For purposes of using the online auction software, please be sure that you're using any of the supported web browsers listed here and that you have a stable internet connection. If you need to reach us, please contact the auction manager team by email at aep-cbp@nira.com. And as a reminder, if you intend to submit a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security, it must be sent electronically to this same email address. And this concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.